Today on the Nerd Outcast podcast, we talk about the history and development of video game music. Welcome back. I'm your host, Chris Bashan, and this is a topic that we have been building to for a long time, and this is going to be kind of, hopefully, a hefty podcast, so I hope, listener, that you will enjoy this. As is typical for this podcast, I've brought on a group of experts who feel they can speak with some authority about the topic of video game music, and they're scattered all across the United States. One of them is in Texas, and his name is...
Zach Munn.
Welcome back, Zach!
Hello, Chris!
Yay! Hey, dude, it's so great to talk with you.
It's great to talk with you, man, all the way from Texas, which you didn't even bother naming a city because it's Texas.
What city are you in, just in case?
Dallas, the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
I've been to Dallas. Traffic is awful.
It's a monster.
Zach, you were on the Die Hard podcast. What else were you on?
I did Legend of Zelda.
Oh, weren't you on Half-Life?
And Half-Life, yeah, I must have been. Yes, I definitely was.
Oh, nice, dude. Oh, that was the last one I think you recorded before you moved, so.
I think so, yeah. That was a great one.
Well, in case somebody is listening to you for the first time, what type of nerd are you?
a wide variety of nerd. I'm a big video game personage, and I'm a big music nerd, and I spent, I don't know, a lot of time watching movies and playing tabletop games as well. So a sort of a smorgasnerd.
Smorgasnerd. That sounds really dirty. let me throw two questions out to you then.
Sure.
Since we're talking about video game music, what types of video games do you like to play?
Well, I like a wide variety. There's times when all I want to do is play first-person shooters, and then there's a lot of times when only an RPG will do. I guess lately it's been real RPG heavy for me. So that's sort of where I'm pushing my energy, because I've got some hours to throw at it. So that's where the hours go.
Okay, and you also said you were a nerd about music. What type of bands or genres of music do you really enjoy?
I really like real jangly math rock, and I like noise rock a lot, and I'm a big fan of female singer-songwriters, as it turns out.
Why'd you laugh at that?
Because
it's not just about the music.
Because it's not cool. I don't know. Because it's hard for me to because there's a version of me that's 15 years old and sneering at me right now. But I love them. I can't get enough of that that Fiona Apple. She's so cute.
All right. Oh. Well, hold on to all your thoughts and opinions, Zach. We'll jump into the discussion here very shortly. My next expert, he's been on before. He's all the way over in New York, and his name is...
Tom Brown.
So, Tom, kind of some of the same questions to you. If someone's listening to you for the first time, what type of nerd are you?
I guess mostly these days television. Every once in a while I'll sit in front of a video game when I want to use my hands and not just watch a television show. I'll sit in front of a TV and then I'll play a video game. And recently I've been playing Borderlands. Man, it's just frustrating. I can't even say that that's what I'm enjoying, but mostly television.
Tom, for those in the listening audience, you and I both went to college together, and I know for a fact that you took a lot of music theory and are a singer, so I'm kind of curious what type of music you are into.
Music? Well, I mean, I feel like I'm really eclectic. I get really bored really quickly when I listen to music, so I like to be surprised. For instance, my favorite music listening app is Songza, because you can pick the mood or the activity you're doing, and it gives a suggested list of playlists, which is great. I love it. It's free, of course. I'm not plugging it. I'm just saying it's great. So anyway, I like to be surprised. I mean, if you look through my music collection, you'd think it was like some sort of schizophrenic person. I've got lots of music theater, of course, as you said, that was my major. So, but that, you know, classic rock. I love recent, electronic music, I think is really kind of what I like to listen to now.
Okay.
Just interesting things that move and change.
And as far as a gamer, were you a console gamer? Were you a PC gamer? A little of both? What were you?
Well, I started Sega, you know, Master System, Wonder Boy. Anyone? Wonder Boy? Anyway.
Oh, yeah. I remember Wonder Boy.
Yeah.
Yes. No, love that game. Anyway, so that was my, you know, introduction to gaming was that. I mean, I had an Atari, but that didn't really capture the imagination like Sega did. And then, you know, I went to PC. So I was basically, you know, Diablo consumed a lot of my time. I pick a game and then I stick with it. I don't really play a plethora of games. I play a game ad nauseum, and then I get sick of it, and then I stop playing for like 3 months.
Hey, games are expensive, so there's nothing wrong
with
that.
There's that, and the DLC aspect of it has just pissed me off to gaming altogether these days.
All right, all right. Hold.
Sorry.
No. It's okay. Hold on to your thoughts and feelings about DLC. we'll get to all of
enraged.
That. I'm enraged. I have a third expert that has joined us. He's actually only a few blocks away, but he's here in Chicago, and his name is
Noah Applebaum.
Welcome, Noah. I love having new people on the podcast.
Thanks. I'm really happy to be here.
Yes, that is potentially one new listener. So, Noah, first off, I want to say thank you for subbing in at the last moment. I had somebody drop from my podcast, and you and I were talking about it, and you expressed interest in being on, so I'm happy to bring you on board. So, since people are most likely listening to you for the first time, what type of nerd are you?
I play a lot of video games. I do that a lot, and I spend a lot of time doing that. I'd also definitely consider myself a music nerd as well. I have a degree in music, so I listen to music and I play video games, and then I do other things, but those are probably my largest nerd areas of interest.
Is your degree in what type of music? Is it in classical or contemporary? What is your degree in, Noah?
Yeah, I guess in name, my degree is in modern period art music analysis,
nice.
Which is basically like classical music, but it's not classical because it's not from the classical era. So it's quote unquote classical music from the turn of the 20th century to about World War II time.
Oh, man, that World War II music is just great.
Yeah. It's lovely.
So that's my area of expertise.
Okay. Jumping back to the video game aspect, what type of games do you like to play?
I like to play all kinds of games. I guess I really like strategy games, but specifically like variations on strategy, like strategy slash whatever is usually my jam. Okay. I'm real into like tactical RPGs or real-time strategy or strategic other things.
Top three strategy games.
I really like Final Fantasy Tactics.
Okay.
And then I really like the Disgaea series, which I'm going to say is the same as Final Fantasy Tactics for the purposes of this, because they're basically the same game.
Okay.
I played a lot of StarCraft II, and nice. It's definitely a solid game.
Were you a fan of the original StarCraft?
I was, yeah.
Okay.
I was a very big like 9-year-old fan, and I enjoyed it in a very 9-year-old way. And then every 2 years after that, like, would play it some more. But I think StarCraft II really landed at a time when I had a lot of time to devote to it.
Awesome.
And then the third, I recently, I guess I might get crap from this for some video game players, but I play a lot of MOBAs.
What is MOBA?
Yeah. Like, I hate this initialism, or I guess it's an
acronym.
Acronym, that
multimedia
one.
Multimedia online board game.
Yeah, it's multiplayer online battle arena. But so basically, like, I played a lot of League of Legends for the last 3 years, and then recently I've been playing some Dota 2.
The Dota championships are going on now, aren't they?
They just ended, yeah.
Okay.
And did you win?
I took it all home. I won the $5 million first prize.
Awesome.
Nice.
And you're still here with us. That's awesome.
To talk about game music.
All right, Noah, you MOBA player, just hold on to all your thoughts and feelings. We'll jump into our discussion very shortly. It is now time to introduce my outcast, somebody who is not as familiar with our topic or, dare I say, dislikes it. He's been on the podcast before, and his name is
Pete Novice.
Hi, Pete.
Hi.
Pete is here on the mic with me. Welcome back.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
What was the last podcast I had you on?
I want to say Ray Bradbury.
That was a good podcast.
It was. It was contentious.
I don't know of anyone who really doesn't like Ray Bradbury, so.
Right.
Yeah.
It worked out.
Yeah.
Go Except listen. You, apparently.
I don't not like him. I just hadn't read a lot of them.
Well.
I'm not the biggest fan, I'm going to say.
Oh.
If I went on a podcast right now and...
this is not a Ray Bradbury podcast. This is video game music. Pete, just in case somebody is listening to you for the first time, what type of nerd are you?
I'm kind of across the board. I would say my major areas are video games and other gaming forms that are not digital, like tabletop games, role-playing, science fiction of all kinds, classic literature, you know, whatever. Whatever's interesting.
Okay.
Cool.
Now, you're more of a PC gamer than a console gamer.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. What are some of your favorite PC games? You're on the Half-Life podcast, so...
Yes. Yeah, well, I've been on the Half-Life and the Diablo podcasts. Those are both up at the top of my list.
Okay.
Guild Wars and Guild Wars 2. Nice, friendly, non-subscription MMOs. Not that I'm plugging that. But,
we'll get to World of Warcraft one day.
Some of the, like, classic adventure games, like Monkey Island...
The LucasArts games?
Yeah.
Nice. Everybody likes those LucasArts games. There's nothing wrong with them.
No, they're perfect.
No. Do you guys play the LucasArts games?
Yeah.
Yep. I played a couple. I played a couple. I was never a
Lego
huge...
Lego Star Wars?
Damn it. I'm not a huge Close. Star Wars guy.
Damn it. Wait.
Sorry.
Wait, you don't like Star Wars in general?
I don't. I kind of don't.
We just lost Zach. Wow.
We just lost Zach's feed. Zach, that is a discussion for another time.
I figured that's another day. I didn't want to go into too much detail.
I could hear the hesitancy in your voice. So,
classic soundtrack, though.
Great soundtrack.
Oh, yeah. If Star Wars was a video game, and I'm sure it is, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's like 40 video games.
It's like 40 video games. So, Pete, let's spend a little more time with you.
Sure.
You're my outcast, and you said you wanted to be my outcast.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Why are you my outcast? Do you not know about game music? Do you not like game music? Because you like video games, so
right.
There must be some degree of the music. Like, if the music was bad, I feel it would have driven you away.
Maybe. Okay, so here's kind of my background. I grew up playing trumpet in band and orchestra and jazz band and, you know, got this very, like, grounded childhood in, like, music theory and, like, what's quality music. And I was that nerd who listened to classical music in high school. And then, like, that was in the 80s, and video games in the 80s just had bad music. Like, it's not great because of the technological limitations that they were dealing with. So I appreciate great music when it's in a video game. But I'm not going to go out and, like, drop $40 to hear an orchestra play that music in concert because I'm nostalgic about when I was 12.
The video games live concert is the most brilliant thing you could pay $40 for. It was $90.
Paid $90? That's cool.
Way to get yourself back in. okay, keep going. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
So, like, there are definitely, like, iconic moments of video game music that, like, I love, but I love them as part of that experience of playing the game, not necessarily as something that, like, you could extract and present to anybody, and they would be like, that's a great thing.
Okay. Now, you said something interesting that I want to mention. You said that you felt video game music in the 80s was bad because of the limits of technology?
It was so reliant on sort of like, I guess I would call it like primitive synthesizer.
We'll talk about
vibe.
Well, yeah.
And it was just so transparently, even on the good stuff back then, it was just like sort of trying to imitate what real instruments would be like if they could actually, you know, have the budget to go out and record an orchestra.
So you are not a fan of chiptune music, as it has become known as?
Apparently not.
Okay. We'll talk about that, but yeah, so it's that subset of video game music is known as chiptune music, so. Is there a game soundtrack, perhaps, that you do like, or something that you just remember that stuck out to you?
It's really like the bass themes from a couple of different games. Like in Diablo, mm-hmm. that little lute strum.
The Tristram.
When you first log in. Yep.
Ah.
The way Half-Life used music to, like, propel the story and add urgency or, like, calm you down at various times. Full Throttle.
Yeah.
That was the first of those LucasArts games that, like, let you be a badass, and it had a soundtrack that worked with that. So it was a lot of, like, heavy metal, which ordinarily was, like, completely separate from video games because nerds aren't that kind of person. So okay. It was nice to have, like, that different experience of video game music.
All right. Well, remember, Pete, as my outcast, you are allowed to challenge, comment, question anything that we happen to talk about as we go into this discussion. And if we don't bring up something that you are currently really wanting to discuss, please let me know. You have that power. Yep. So.
And I get to kill one expert. Right?
You get to kill one expert, yeah.
Okay. I'm excited about that, too, yeah. By the way.
But I don't supply the airfare to get there. So.
Oh, so it'll be somebody local. All right.
Kill Noah. All right. You also are forbidden to talk about how bad Video Games Live is, because it's not. It's amazing. Great. Well, let's kind of jump into the history of video game music. And remember my expert. It sounds like Pete doesn't like chiptune music, so maybe the first 15 years of video game history he's gonna hate. So we're gonna try and make him love it. I don't think we're gonna succeed, but we're gonna try.
Just something to keep in mind: we all hate chiptune music, but because it existed, the later stuff was that much more grand. As you start playing video games, you'll see.
All right, already sorry, Chris, I'm going to take exception to that.
Yeah, I don't hate chiptune music.
I don't hate chiptune
all.
Music.
All right. I'm saying, like, you guys pop in a CD and listen to chiptune music?
Well, first off, nobody CD buys CDs anymore.
That's what I'm saying.
I do own more than one chiptune music.
All right.
CD.
Just answer the question that you guys actually listen to.
Yeah,
you'll
on
just
purpose.
Listen to an MP3, not mixed with anything cool, just totally just chiptune music.
Yeah, yes. I mean, if you're implying that...
We're talking... when I think chiptune music, I'm talking about the music that would cut out when the lasers would fire. That's
yeah, Tom, I have the entire soundtrack to Mega Man.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, yeah. Dude.
Okay. All right. Well, that might be the only thing I don't agree with.
All right. Hold on to your thoughts. Let's first talk about the history of video game music. So, the history of video game music, I'm not going to attempt to pretend that I am a programmer. I will speak to the best of my knowledge about the history of video game music. My experts, feel free to jump in and add in anything as we talk about it. I don't think any of us are engineers, but if one of you is an engineer, that's great. So feel free to talk about it if you want to. Video games have obviously been around a long time, all the way back since the 70s. And the first few, probably the big hits of video games, didn't have music. I'm specifically looking at you, Pong. Pong obviously had no music, had a very limited, I don't even think it had a separate, like there were no sound cards, I don't even think there were like sound chips, like I think the sound literally came off the motherboard. Pete, you
Yeah, it just had a component that could go bleep.
Yeah.
At a different frequency.
I made a note of a game that I feel kind of started introducing the idea of music, although it didn't have music per se, was Space Invaders. Space Invaders had no music, but it did have that bump, bump, bump that continued to increase in tempo as the aliens dropped down closer and closer to you. And I think that's one of the first examples of using some type of sound effect to augment your experience as you played the game. Of course, probably one of the biggest ones that almost anyone on the planet probably knows is the fanfare music from Pac-Man. Again, yeah. Pac-Man didn't have music, but when you started up the game, it had that little bit at the beginning where it goes.
It's about 4 seconds.
Yeah, it's not very long. I think it's the only music in the game, but that is, since Pac-Man is probably one of the most pop culture-y things that we can reference, everyone probably knows what that is.
I don't think I've ever heard that before.
You've never heard of Pac-Man?
I've heard of Pac-Man, but you say Pac-Man, the music, and I'm like...
Have you played Pac-Man?
There's a little
fanfare.
You would hear it and you would recognize. It's been in pop culture dozens of times.
I bet if I played it for you, you'd be like, oh, that's Pac-Man.
Yeah.
Maybe. Or it'd be like, that's not very good music.
Or you would turn on your music hate. something I found really interesting, in 1983, Dragon's Lair came out, which was, I don't know if I would say that's a great game, but it was the first game to use LaserDisc technology, and it had actual music and voices. I don't know if that would have been considered Redbook Audio. Do any of you, any of my experts, do you know if Redbook Audio existed at that time?
Let's find out.
Let's not research it on the air, but Zach, I'm going to put you to task on that.
Okay. That'll be my job.
Just to continue on with our quick little history lesson here. Obviously, then the Nintendo and Sega Master System came out. Both of these consoles specifically had processors that had parts of their RAM and chips designed to create music. Tom, you mentioned, I forget which game you were talking about, but like, you were talking about some chiptune game. For some of these systems, the sound effects and the music pulled from the same channels. So
yeah, they had like two channels. It was Atari. I can't remember the game either, but it was like when the lasers would go off, for instance, the music would stop. You know, so and the music, when I say music, I'm using the term loosely because it was one tone, sometimes two tones. And not like different sounding tones, not like, oh, a trumpet and a string. No, no. Two boops of different. You know, I mean, that is what I thought of as 8-bit chiptune.
I thought boop was the basic unit of measurement for music. Isn't it like one boop or three boops?
This will be 3.5 boops. Guys, get it right.
Three boops.
No one knows
equal
what I'm talking
one bamf.
About.
So, I do know specifically, like, as far as the NES and the Sega Master System were concerned, sometimes the games pushed the limits of their sound capabilities. So, for instance, like, in Mega Man 4, certain sound effects would cause the certain parts of the music to drop out because they just didn't have enough sound channels. Although, I did find out Sega Master System had 3 sound channels, which is 3 times the amount that the Nintendo had. Good job, Sega.
Good work. Didn't they also start adding little sound fixtures onto the cartridges themselves for certain games?
Yeah, certain. Since the hardware, they couldn't mod the hardware, certain game companies would mod the games themselves and add additional chips to create additional graphical effects or sound capabilities. This obviously sometimes raised the cost of the particular cartridge in question. But yeah, usually developers would just modify chips on their end. Of course, then they would have to also produce more, you know, more hardware in the game box. So just to kind of keep pushing forward, then in the PlayStation era, we were finally blessed with CD quality audio, and this is where Redbook Audio and whatnot came through. This is where processors were finally able to take samples and actually generate types of speech or actually mimic music instruments or actually sample real instruments. And eventually we got to full orchestral soundtracks. I can't think of a game on the PlayStation actually that uses a real orchestral soundtrack, but some come
pretty close.
Oh, I mean,
there's lots. The PlayStation could just play like music from a CD as a soundtrack.
Yeah.
So what was the first game to do it? If, you know, you don't count all the times they cheated.
I think the first games to use, like, real, actual audio were on the Master System, because that was the first disc-based media video game. But once they were on CDs, this Redbook Audio encoding let them just simultaneously play music while the system was otherwise making the game happen. So
can you real quick define Redbook Audio?
Redbook is a standard that they use for compact disc audio, right?
I believe you're correct. Yes.
Yeah. So that's a universal standard that they use. Is what Redbook Audio is, and I think it began in 1980.
Oh.
Yeah, and it had already existed, obviously, in the music industry. It took a while for video games to eventually have the capability to generate such audio, and it obviously came along when CD technology came along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's what, like, if you look at, like, early compact discs, as it were, like, they're sometimes labeled multimedia discs, and part of what that meant was that they could have more than one thing being read off of them at once. So you could read a straight music track that had been recorded, like an audio CD, while it was also reading a game off of it.
Mm.
Yeah, you could actually take certain PlayStation discs and just pop them in a CD player, and it would read it as a CD with music.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah, and you could they sold that as a feature too, where you listen to the soundtrack on your CD player.
Yeah, Pete.
Yeah, question for someone who did not grow up playing every console. Like what year are we talking?
We just covered a huge chunk of time from like 1975 to 1994. So
okay, so like 94 is when consoles are getting like CD quality.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Now, you played a lot of PC games. Are you able to speak to PCs at the time? I also had a PC. I remember the music obviously was better because PCs were already using CD technology.
Right.
And their processors were much better.
Yeah, and I think the difference was that on a PC, you could have these, you know, even if it's not recorded music, you could have these giant, you know, MIDI files that you can play in the background because you've got whatever enormous hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's really about like how good is your sound card?
Yeah.
Which is, to be fair, was one of the things I hated about having a PC when I was in high school, was constantly having to upgrade each component separately.
Yeah. And you always prayed that they would work well together.
Right.
Yeah, that's a little
hope rare. I can find the drivers.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm like modifying your startup files, which is something I would never imagine doing now. Like,
oh, God.
I'm like, I can just changing numbers at random to make things work.
Well, and on the PC side of things, I remember for a while, sound cards were a thing. Like, you would upgrade your sound card like you would your video card. I feel nowadays, sound cards are pretty irrelevant. Like, they've just kind of hit a standard of quality that... pointless, or it
can play it now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
yeah, I definitely remember, like, the old ads for, like, hot new sound cards being right next to the video cards in, like, mm-hmm. the magazine or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah. Your Sound Blaster 96,000, whatever.
Oh, they always did have the worst names.
Oh, they really did. So, my experts, I kind of just covered about 20 years of video game history and development. Is there anything you guys want to add to that before we kind of just start jumping into specifics? Anything we touched on or whatnot?
I just want to defend my point. I don't like 8-bit, like the old, like two-tone chip music, I think is what you're calling it. Chip
no,
music.
I'm taking your opinion at face value, and I'm going to judge you from now on.
Okay, that's fine. But like,
yeah,
I was listening to the Metroid, like the Metroid games.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Those were chip tunes as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think chiptune, we'll talk about this, but chiptune is something that's really kind of come into the zeitgeist of music, at least for me, okay. Recently. I don't know really
well, when
how
it for,
long.
When all of this first started happening, you didn't even have musicians doing it. You had programmers doing it who didn't necessarily have any musical talent. So to Peter's point, I totally understand. Like, these guys weren't musicians. They were programmers. And they had one tone to work with, maybe two. And then when the laser fired, it stopped the music. Now I realized very quickly within 5-10 years, I'm still in the 80s, I think. What you guys are saying is the music became much, much better. And they had many more channels, like 6-8 channels. And then the music became more interesting, like Metroid. And you had these crazy effects that were, they were utilizing the technology to its maximum effectiveness. And that was amazing, especially because of the limitations of the technology.
Yeah, just to jump on one thing that you said, Tom, a lot of the game companies in the 80s were actually bringing in musicians to score their games. For instance, Final Fantasy, which did come out in 1987, even though it is chiptune music, they brought in a composer to actually create the score. Now, Kind of.
Well, so this is an interesting discussion, but... to Tom's point that they weren't necessarily having musicians do these things, Uematsu, who is the composer for most of the Final Fantasy games and definitely all the early ones, was completely self-taught as a musician. Like, he didn't have any bona fides as a musician, and he kind of came in on the basis that he said that he was interested in composing music for video games, but had no background actually doing that. And Nintendo just gave him the job. Hmm. Or not Nintendo, but Square.
Yeah.
Square. And similarly, on Nintendo's end, Koji Kondo, who composed the music for Mario Bros. And several other games, both of these people had backgrounds playing music, but were entirely self-taught and weren't professional composers prior to making these soundtracks.
Which are, and I gotta say, for Uematsu in particular, they're just incredible. It's just incredible music. I mean, for essentially a non-musician.
Yeah, and with the limitations that we've been discussing, it was incredible. And so much so that it became pop culture in Japan. And that's when America started to realize, maybe the soundtracks of video games are important. We should hire composers, too.
Yeah, it just to speak to the different regions, video game music caught on way stronger in Japan in the 80s and 90s than it did here in America. As we've touched on in previous podcasts, they were already hosting full orchestral symphonies and whatnot for different game companies throughout the late 80s and early 90s, and they would release... It's really common, especially back then, to go into a store in Tokyo and they'll have a huge game music section. It didn't really catch on. I don't think people... I don't know. Here's an interesting question to all my outcasts. My one outcast and my experts. At what point did people start kind of just thinking of video game music as something that was good and enjoyable, separated from the game that it was played in?
I still don't think of it that way.
You don't think of it that way?
Well, now it's better. I'm gonna, you guys talk.
But I don't think anybody's going to go out and listen to the music from a game they've never played. You know, people listen to the music because it brings them back to their experience at the game.
I think that's exactly right. I mean, for me, the real value in it is creating those, you know, little moments in games. And I'm not necessarily going out to, you know, in public to watch the music. Not that there's anything bad with that. Oh, but for me, if I listen to it separately from the game, then I get to recall some of the atmosphere that the game brought me, or an emotion here or there, or whatever, you know?
No, yeah,
I think that's a fair point.
Oh, yeah. I mean, these days, what I love about video game music is not how pretty the music is. It's how much it draws me into the game. So if I'm playing a game, I was just last night, I'm playing Borderlands again, and I'm playing it, and all of a sudden there are drums. And I'm like, what the fuck are the drums? There's something happening. And I look up, and there's these, you know, animals attacking me because of the music. And I was like, this is wonderful. This is what I love about video game music today versus, you know, 10 years ago when it was literally a CD track just playing in the background. Now it is influenced by gameplay, and that is when it's at its best.
I think for me, I mean, it is recollecting those little moments that listening to it separately gives for me. But I don't know, like, I think all the way back to like Super Mario World, like where if you add Yoshi, it sort of adds like a bongo beat, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that's the first example I can think of where the gameplay, it affects gameplay or it adds into gameplay. I can't think of anything earlier, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know what the first...
Sonic the Hedgehog.
Oh, that's
whenever
true.
Whenever you would get your, you know, the star. Oh, actually, the star in Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's probably a game further back than that, but I mean, yeah, this... Now we're kind of talking about, like, the function of game music versus... its absence before. But yeah, I mean, the star, you know, speaking to Sonic, Tom, when you're about to drown and the music kicks into that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and it starts.
Yes,
yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
That was very effective.
Just one final thought before I kind of want to talk to everybody individually. Do you throw game music in the same camp as like a movie score?
They're so close.
Like now, for sure. For like the last couple of years.
Yeah, I agree with that.
They're like, especially they're equivalently sized industries these days, and I feel like the scoring has basically become like the same sized project.
I'm saying, even back to like, I mean, when did the first Halo game come out? And the money they threw at music for that game, mm-hmm. I mean, they spent so much on music, and that was like what, 2000? I don't even know.
Do you guys listen to? I guess what I'm trying to get at is, do you listen to movie scores for the same reason, like to invoke memories of the movie that you saw, or do you feel the music stands up by itself?
It can be either.
But
I mean,
for game music,
sometimes
it's not. Is that
no, sometimes it could be both for game music as well. Like I can't think of an example right now of a catchy video game song that I would like to listen to just for the fun of it. But, like Soul Calibur. I think all those songs are pretty fun. Oh, the GameCube Super Smash Brothers Melee. I love all that music.
Oh, yeah.
That's when I really realized how orchestral a game could sound.
You know, it's funny you mentioned Smash Brothers, Tom, because Smash Brothers is really nothing more than an arrangement and orchestrations and celebration of the music that came before. Like, that's where you'll hear the orchestrations of, like,
the Zelda
theme, the Mario
theme. And that's
theme,
what I loved about it. It was clearly the old music, but put to, you know, an orchestra. Peter.
Peter, what's going on over there, my outcast?
No, see, I feel like this sort of is. I mean, it's like, okay, if you played Mario, if you played Zelda, if you played all that old stuff, then seeing that music brought back then makes you appreciate the game that brought it back, and then later on, listening to the music again makes you recall all of those things. But, like, if I sat down and, like, listened to that soundtrack, I would be like, oh, well, that do-do-do-do-do-do-do, that's Mario, and there's that Zelda thing. Da, da, da. But, like, they don't have any meaning for me.
So you think it's purely a nostalgic exercise?
I think it's probably 90% that.
I mean, I somewhat agree with you. Like, I find it very hard to listen to the soundtrack to a movie I've not seen. However, like, there are certain soundtracks to movies like Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan, which I feel the music, I can listen to that music and it will invoke scenes from the movie for me. I can listen to that music and I just enjoy the music, pretty disconnected from the film that it was in. Like, when I listen to Dr. Wily's Stage 1 music, I'm not thinking about Dr. Wily Stage 1. I'm thinking about, like, how upbeat and epic and, like, intense this chiptune that I'm listening to is. Or if I listen to, like, the main theme of Metal Gear Solid. But then sometimes it is that whole thing of, oh, I remember as a kid, you know, listening to this as a child. But I think you're right. Like, I think, like I don't listen to soundtracks I have to games I have not played, typically.
Right. So. And it's not about, like, I'm not saying, like, it's like, oh, I wish I was a child again. Wasn't that so nice? But, like, it restores that emotional state that you were in when you were playing that level. And, like, it's like, yeah, I want some, like, badass music to work out to, so I'll put on this music from this arcade game, which makes me feel like I'm, like, racing and shooting things. And...
If I want to work out, I put on the soundtrack to Transformers the movie, so...
Yeah, oh, my God.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Well, like, I mean, the comparison to movies is interesting, because movies are sort of, like, the most lucrative employers of, like, music composers that exist today. I might be wrong about that, but I don't think there's any other... Like, I don't think any composer makes more money than the people who compose major motion picture soundtracks. So that's sort of just, like, not necessarily the best composers working today, but a lot of the preeminent composers in, like, any given genre of music are, but especially, like, you know, classical music or art music, are composing for movies. And that's, like, maybe now starting to be the case for video games, but hasn't really been until really, really recently, if it is. So I think, like, there are movie soundtracks that stand up on their own because they're, like, great works of music that a really good composer was hired to do for a movie. But for video games, that hasn't really been the case until recently, that someone would hire, like, a well-known good composer, like, and pay them as much money as they would need to be paid to compose a soundtrack to a video game. Like, there are really great video game soundtracks that I think maybe stand up on their own, but not as many probably, and until recently, like, there just aren't, like, that caliber of composition isn't happening in video games.
Right. Like, I feel like we're waiting for the John Williams of video game music.
Right.
That would, or, like, be, you know, Nobuo
like,
Uematsu.
I would listen to... I have listened to Uematsu, the composer for Final Fantasy. Like, I'll listen to compositions he's written that aren't in a video game or that he's written for video games I haven't played, because I think he's, like, a really fantastic composer. But even then, like, as someone who's studied music academically on this level or whatever, like, he's really great, but it's not like he's doing anything revolutionary in the world of music or, like, pushing the envelope. Not that movie composers do either.
Noah is right, because people, when they are musicians and they go to train to be musicians, they generally don't think that they're going to be a video game composer at the end of it all. That's not, like, not to... cast dispersions. I'm just saying, like, most people, you know, Pete, right? I mean, I went to a music school. That's not what people were going to school for. So people don't go and try to be video game composers.
Right.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
acting school would be a motion capture.
I mean, I'm not saying that no one does. I'm just saying, like, that's not the general norm of, that's not where the talent's flowing, is what I'm trying to say.
For me, I think it's hard to say that the standards for music as a whole should all be wrapped up in these one or two very central locations that you're talking about, like saying that the arbiters of music are, and this is nothing to you or to anyone, the arbiters of music are the people that go through professional music training, or they're film composers, you know, like that's the arbiter of music now, and I don't believe it's true. I think there's really interesting stuff going on with even old soundtracks, or even chiptune, which can also mean sort of messing around with old soundtracks and finding new things in them, right? I don't think that the exclusive province of whether this music is incredible or worthy of study belongs with the idea that it's not as good as film music in some way. Hmm. I mean, for me, that stuff is you, I don't think you can centralize sort of like whether or not it's good in that kind of way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, and I'd say there's a million terrible movie soundtracks out there, too.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, absolutely.
Most of the time, it's writing in cliches, you know, to get at a pretty specific emotional result. you know, and it's like, well, we do this, we do that, and then people will be excited. John Williams.
John Williams is great. Too bad he stole from the planets. I kind of want to talk with each of you about your personal experiences with game music. And Zach, I'd like to start with you. Like, when did you first notice game music? Was there a specific game that you were playing that you that just kind of really stuck out to you?
Yeah, the Legend of Zelda, for sure.
The first game?
Yeah, the very first one.
Are you about to talk about that waterfall sequence at the beginning of the game?
It's beautiful, man. It's incredible. Like, that's one of my favorite. If you can have favorite video game music moments, which I think you can. That's why there's a whole podcast, right?
Yeah.
That's one of them, because I remember even as a kid, like not even rushing to the game so that I could watch that sequence and enjoy that.
Yeah, I mean that sequence kind of like stops you from playing the game. And for those who don't know what we're talking about, Pete. basically, when you boot up the game, it's just the title of the game in gold with a waterfall falling beneath it, and then you hear the melody, the main theme of the gameplay. And it's just a really slow, kind of beautiful sequence for 1987? 86? I might be wrong on that. Which I grew up with Atari and Intellivision, so I was playing games like Tron and, Frogger and whatnot, and they did not... Those games did not even attempt Space Invaders, Pac-Man. None of these games attempted to establish a mood before you even jumped into the game. So I'm kind of in your boat, Zach. Like, I remember that as a very specific moment for me of a game soundtrack.
We agree completely. It brings you into the game, and it provides a lot of atmosphere, which is a lot of what I look for in music that I enjoy in games. Some examples of that I super, super love. I don't know if you guys played Fez in the last couple of years.
I've been playing through it like the last week.
It's, oh, you're right on it right now. How are you enjoying it?
It's great. It's super fun. And I love the soundtrack for sure.
It's incredible. And it's this great sort of atmospheric, lovely thing that pulls you into the game and gives it this weird, cool atmosphere. I love that. I love a similar thing happens in Bastion, which I really enjoy. One of my favorite game musics recently was in Bioshock Infinite, which I know some of you guys must have played.
Yeah, sure.
Bioshock Infinite had a lot of really cool diegetic music, right? So it originates in the story of the game. Like, it'll be a barbershop quartet you're walking by, or some music playing on the speakers of a store. And this really cool atmosphere they established of, yeah, sure, I mean, we can talk about steampunk all day, but it was sort of beyond that, and that it was beautiful and turn-of-the-century American, but sort of all its own thing because of the fantasy nature of the game. I don't know. I super, super loved it, super, super got into it, and a million other examples, I guess.
Noah, let me jump over to you. Is there an instance that game music really stuck out to you that you remember?
I'm trying to think. I can't remember like a singular instance, but I remember like a lot of hours spent early on in my life playing, like, I guess it was all fighting games, like Street Fighter II for sure, and then like the Tekken games and Bloody Roar. Anyone remember that classic?
Was that a PlayStation game?
Yeah, Bloody Roar. That was actually the first game I owned for the PlayStation. But all three of those games had like real distinct soundtracks, and specifically like Street Fighter II, I think, has like a really iconic soundtrack. All the songs kind of sound really similar, but they're all really great. And like, if I was trying to go through game soundtracks I liked leading up to being on the podcast to kind of jog my memory. And like, as soon as I found like the Street Fighter 2 stuff, I was like going through a YouTube video of like, here's the whole soundtrack of Street Fighter 2. Like instantly, like as soon as I hear a song, it takes me back to like the whole animated background it takes place on.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'm right there in my living room beating up my friend on a screen.
Tom, let me jump over to you because I know you were a Sega kid and a PC gamer. Is there a moment that kind of sticks out to you for game music or when you noticed it for the first time?
The first time I noticed it was when I got a cheat code for Sonic the Hedgehog, and it allowed you to pick any level or, you know, be infinite, but also allowed you to go through and listen to all of the music of all of the levels. I'm sure other games had something similar.
Oh, yeah.
And I loved that. That was the first time I really listened to it, because I was playing, and you know, but as I listened to it, I was like, oh, yeah. And then I was playing this level, and this is what the level looked like as I was playing it. So I can completely understand why someone wouldn't want to listen to this music had they not played the games, you know. But I believe we've kind of developed a taxonomy just talking about this. Noah's, you know, alluded to it recently. Video game music has become way more cinematic. They're hiring huge name composers. $300 million goes into making a video game now. So a lot of that money goes to a big composer, orchestra, you know, musicians, maybe more than one composer, choirs. You know, Skyrim, my gosh, the choir at the beginning of Skyrim is so, it was so great. So now, you know, we listen to, I'm sorry, what was the question, Chris?
the first time game music jumped out to you.
First time. Oh, Diablo is another example I can think of where, and Final Fantasy, town music. I love town music. Everything's fine. Nothing's going to harm you. And you're just listening to happy town music. You know, I love that. The concept of town music. And then you go out into the wild and then things go wrong. But Diablo, I loved it. Would stick in my brain for when I wasn't playing it. I did play it for 9-10 hours straight at a time, regularly. So it's not a wonder that the music got stuck in my head. But I did love that music in Diablo.
Just to jump on the Diablo train, that and town music, the Tristram theme that plays in town.
Yes, I can hear it.
You do all your inventory
now.
Management.
Yes, and how much time do you spend there?
In your inventory.
Making gems and potions. Oh my god.
And that music's playing the whole time.
It's also a very peaceful tune, but it's very sad because, you know, Diablo is underneath the town.
Yeah, there is it's not a great place.
Rampant death and Holocaust all around.
Pete, I see you. Yes. I see you making notes over there. Let me check in. Is there a question or something that we've touched on?
Well, it occurred to me that there is one old school sort of low res soundtrack that I really liked, and I think exactly suits the game, and that's the music from Tetris.
What did you play Tetris on?
Probably on a PC. Okay. But I mean, like the music is written very simply, and it's a game that you're restarting the game every couple minutes. Mm-hmm. It's not like you're going to play this game for I didn't play this game for like multiple hours straight and just listen to the same phrase repeat and repeat and repeat and repeat. I feel like was the case with some of the other games of the time.
Right.
Where, like, you know, they wrote their 12 seconds of music and it's just designed to loop with itself forever.
Mm-hmm. One thing I wanted to bring up about Tetris, that's really weird. I was really about to bring that up. Tetris is the first instance that I can remember where I heard video game music using famous pieces of music from elsewhere in the world. Specifically, Tetris uses music from the Nutcracker and from Bach. I believe it's Bach's French Suite number 3 in major, minor, I don't know for sure. And it was just really interesting to hear classical music taken and then put into a chiptune form. And I didn't realize this till after the fact. And when I first played Tetris, I was just like, oh, this music sounds really interesting. Then I heard those orchestras later on, and I was like, oh my god, that's Tetris. That's so interesting. It's the first use of license, but not really needing to pay for it.
Right.
That's, they would use a lot of folk songs and other public domain things because they didn't have to pay for it or write it.
So my question I want to throw out to all of you now is, who are some of your favorite composers or soundtracks? Zach, I'll start with you.
Okay. I guess if we're going full soundtracks and not going like moment to moment, for full soundtracks for me, I loved the Final Fantasy VI soundtrack. That's Uematsu. And I loved the Chrono Trigger soundtrack. And this'll maybe, I don't know how people feel about it, but the first Portal soundtrack, I still love it.
Oh, it's really good.
The last song from Portal is probably my all-time
perfect
pinnacle of musical experience with a video game.
It blew my mind too. I loved it.
It's really, really great.
Like everything about that moment was so perfect after struggling through the game.
It really touched a note with me. I mean, for me, it's hard even to go full soundtrack. I'm just moment to moment. Like, there's a moment in Red Dead Redemption that I know you guys know about, where you first get into Mexico. The first time you enter Mexico in Red Dead Redemption, this really sort of, you can call it lovely, guitar track starts playing, and it really sets this whole atmosphere up for what is essentially like the second half of the game, right? You know, second half of the game style, like even Final Fantasy VI at a second half of the game, just an utter music change. Your outworld music utterly changes in the second half of that game. And then maybe a moment in Far Cry 3 even. There's a moment at the end of the game where you get into a helicopter and you start firing a machine gun to Ride of the Valkyries, like Apocalypse Now style.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of murderously great.
No, let me jump over to you. Same question. Favorite soundtracks or important composers to you?
Sure. Well, like, I love pretty much all the music that comes out of like major main series Nintendo games, and all the Final Fantasy games. And like, yeah, like I love like Final Fantasy VII soundtrack and Chrono Trigger soundtrack. So I have an iPod Nano that I stole from my girlfriend. So it only fits so much music on it at once. And there's only 3 video game soundtracks that are permanently on there.
Okay.
So one of them is from Disgaea, which is a tactical RPG. And I guess to Pete's point earlier about like Tetris and like that music just repeats itself, I think it's an interesting thing that like video game music is sort of the only music I can think of outside of like maybe elevator music that has to be designed to like repeat potentially infinitely and hopefully not get boring. So the Disgaea soundtrack, which is composed by Tenpei Sato, I looked it up, but I don't think he's composed music to any other games that I know of. But I just, I put like 400 hours into between like the first 3 games of the series, like hour after hour after hour, and it's the only soundtrack I can think of where I've put that many hours into a game and then wanted to keep listening to the music more.
Huh.
It's just got a really nice feel to it. I love the music from Katamari Damacy.
Yeah.
And that's one of these games where I feel like the soundtrack makes it fun. I don't know. I can't imagine playing that game and enjoying it without the music.
That game is so weird and off the wall that the music kind of has to be that.
Yeah. And then to finish out my trio of niche interest Japanese video games, the other soundtrack that I've got on my iPod that I listen to every now and then is the Guilty Gear soundtrack. Guilty Gear is a Japanese-made fighting game. It's kind of the least accessible, most intense fighting game there is. And the designer of the game is also the composer. He composes music for other series of games, but he designed Guilty Gear. this guy Daisuke Ishiwatari, and it's like kind of stereotypical 80s heavy metal guitar music, but it's really good, and it fits the game and the pace of the game perfectly, and it just makes the experience for me, kind of like Katamari. I can't imagine playing the game without the music, and it kind of ruined other fighting games for me, because every time I turn on a fighting game, like I have like Marvel vs. Capcom or like a Soul Calibur game, and every time I turn it on and it's not the opening music from Guilty Gear, I'm like so much less pumped to play this game. Because every time I turn on Guilty Gear, it's like, oh yeah, here we go, going to play this game now.
Tom, same questions to you, man. Favorite soundtracks or important composers?
Well, I mentioned Diablo. Final Fantasy, though, was the first time I had ever heard in college. Actually, Chris, you let me listen to like an orchestral arrangement of some Final Fantasy music. It never occurred to me that this was something that anyone had ever done, and so that's when I really started investing in the music and listening to the music of these games. But also, I love how the game is affected by the music. I mean, it's nice to listen to the music, but I'm playing a game, so I can't divorce the two. Insofar as the music enhances gameplay, it is all the better. Half-Life, for instance, there's not a lot of music. It's very incidental. Like every once in a while you'll enter a new area and then the music, there's just like a little like clip that'll play, you know, just to set the mood of a new area in the map. I love that. Eternal Darkness, remember that, Chris, on the
yeah.
GameCube? Oh man, that had a great soundtrack. I mean,
yeah.
And it would constantly be affected by what you were doing. Oh my gosh, when your insanity meter would go up. There is nothing more creepy. I, as a grown man, cannot play that game in the darkness.
It's impossible now, yeah.
Because what will happen is, as your insanity meter goes up, you'll start hearing babies crying and women weeping, and it's all like 3D, so it kind of sounds like it's coming in from the other room. That's amazing. That's a soundtrack right there.
And then you get eaten by a groundworm.
And then you get eaten by a groundworm. Your head falls off for no reason.
Oh, that was such a creepy game.
Oh, it was so good. Last of Us, I just played recently.
Oh, yeah.
Has a great, great soundtrack. It's evocative, again, affected by gameplay and what happens
during the
game.
It disappears altogether, man. It goes away sometimes.
Yes, and in that, it's like a movie score sometimes, you know? I like that. So, yeah, those are my favorite. I don't know any composer names, but those guys.
We've kind of touched on it a little bit, but like, the function of game music has changed. If I were to use Diablo, I guess, as an example, I feel they probably went to the composer and said, we need sorrowful town music, we need creepy dungeon music, we need now you're in a bloody cave music.
Here's 20 tracks, and you play them at different times, and that's it.
And
it's totally different now.
And now, since games are so cinematic, it's the guy is jumping from the helicopter, and we need something that sounds like something from... any spy thriller that you've ever heard, you know? I don't... Maybe they don't do it that way. I'm guessing that's the way they do it, but... You keep looking at your notes, so...
Well,
I'm just...
I do, because there's just interesting...
Oh, go ahead.
Well, I feel like the thing that I'm really noticing is that I think we all actually have much more in common about this than I expected to. Like, there's nobody who's a complete nerd for, like, 80s, super early Nintendo music, except probably Chris.
Yo.
Yeah.
What's up?
He's like, yeah, I just turn on Super Mario Brothers just for background music.
It's so good.
You know, it's like as this has evolved as an art form and the music has turned in more of something that functions more like a movie's score does to really, like, support the gameplay moment to moment and, like, be another way to tell the story, you know, it gets better and we can appreciate it more. So, yeah. It's not all bad, except for you.
You know, I'm guessing there's probably a huge amount of the internet community that would be on my side, buddy. That's
just about everyone listening to this podcast.
Yeah, pretty much everyone.
Yeah.
When you've got a huge amount of the internet community,
I'll let you know.
Subscribing to your podcast?
Sure, sure. Right. My experts, is there anything that we've touched on so far that you want to explore a little bit more? I have some more questions for all of you, but I wanted to check in with all of you. Pete sounds like he's coming around, so I guess that's good.
That's something.
One of us.
I did have one example I wanted to throw out of sort of music working in the opposite direction, which is right now we're talking about music in service of the game, right? And it really does just serve the game's purpose, and that's why you listen to it. There's an incredible game. It's a real short game. Little, I guess you call it an indie game. It's called Keyboard Drum Set Fucking Werewolf. And this is a game that is exactly one song long, and you're sort of playing these little mini games while the song is playing and changing for each one of these mini games, right? And the goal is to get to the end of the song, and it's actually pretty tough. It's really tough to get past like the fifth or sixth mini game, and then you start to hear the song again and again. But the thing is, it's an incredible song. It's this super badass, sort of a punk song, and like screechy guitars, and it's real fun. And so you end up just trying to finish this song to get the end of the game.
And you said that the music is you don't like that music. Is that what you said?
Oh no, I love it.
Oh, okay.
It's a very fun song. And it's free if you guys check it out. It's a great example of the game sort of exists for the song, right? The game is sort of built around the song rather than the other way around.
Yeah.
Well, I guess like something like Rock Band or Guitar Hero would go in that same category.
Yeah.
Where like you're starting with music that people like and then creating a game around it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean obviously now we have music games. I'm trying to think of a game soundtrack where the game is good and the soundtrack is horrible. I can think of a game where the soundtrack is brilliant and the game is awful, which is Chrono Cross. I'm looking right at you, Chrono Cross.
Yeah, agreed.
Beautiful, beautiful soundtrack. Pretty mediocre game. Are there any bad soundtracks that stand out to you guys, or any bad games with really brilliant soundtracks?
I think there's like a lot of games probably that have bad soundtracks and you just forget them, or you turn it off. Like you turn it off and put on other music. That's what I do.
Yeah, I've done that.
Yeah,
yeah. It's easy to avoid bad game music.
Like League of Legends. Like I've played for like hundreds of hours, and it only has one song that plays in the background. And like, I wouldn't say it's bad. It's all right. It's an okay song. But after like 2 hours of that, and you're gonna play that game for like hundreds of hours, like no way. That's got to be turned off.
All right, I want to throw out a question to my experts, and I'm going to start with you, Tom. If you had to go to someone and you could only present three songs from video game music that you felt they should listen to, like if you wanted to just explain to them why video game music is good or, you know, why it's important, what three songs would you present to them?
Okay.
And if you don't have three, that's okay.
No, I have three. I have three answers. Okay. I may cheat a little with a soundtrack as an answer, but anyway, Super Metroid, repeat, which is a game I have never played, but I have looked it up on YouTube. They have all the entire soundtrack, obviously, right there, and it is really great. If you wanted a good example of chiptune music, that's one for sure. Let's see. The first time I really became aware of how great a game's music could sound while I was playing it, I guess would have to be Smash Brothers Melee. So the whole soundtrack, which is a good one because it's got a lot, as you said, it's got all of the little motives and themes from other games. So that would be another one, my answer too. My third answer would be Skyrim. I really loved the music in Skyrim. I had such a... It's great. It's great music because I am a musician and I enjoy good music, and it's really good music.
All right.
You can listen to it completely divorced of the game, and it's not like you need to be playing it.
You threw out some soundtracks, which is kind of cheating.
I know, I totally cheated. I can't think of a track.
You threw out Smash Brothers, which is like 98 songs.
Yeah, I know.
98 brilliant songs.
And you have
but
to unlock
songs.
Like half of them, so enjoy. There you go.
Noah, same question to you. Three songs or three soundtracks. I'll open it up a little
bit. No, I got songs. I'm not going to cheat. All right. The first one, I'm going to say the Great Fairy Fountain theme from Zelda. And then...
Why Great Fairy Fountain? I'm just curious.
It's so pretty. it's just pretty music that you can put behind anything and it's pretty.
I can't really argue that. It is pretty.
I feel like you saying, "It's so pretty," is going to be your new ringtone for Chris's phone.
Go ahead, Noah.
And then I referred to this earlier, but the track is called Launch Out, and it's the opening to one of the Guilty Gear games, the most recent actual released one. And it's just the best opening song to make you want to play a video game ever, in my opinion. Just some good, straight, pop, cheesy 80s metal that makes you want to fight people on a screen.
Nice.
And my third one, I'm going to go with Succession of Witches from Final Fantasy VIII.
Ah, nice.
Is really creepy. It's a creepy song and only takes place in like creepy moments of the game, and it stands out strangely from other music in the game, but it's just stuck with me since I played that game when I was 11, and like anytime I hear it I'm like, oh man, that's a really good creepy song.
Noah, does that have the choir of women
singing
in the background?
Yep, that's the one.
Okay.
Yeah, they're like, Mima Pinochet.
And it's in Latin, so that just makes it extra creepy.
Right.
Zach, same question to you. Three songs or three soundtracks?
Okay, I'll revisit something we were talking about earlier, and I'll say the end song from the first Portal game. Hmm. So the goal of this is to make them want to play this game or do what?
Make them want to play this game, make them understand why you think this music is good, or just to say this particular song or soundtrack is important.
Okay, yeah, I'm with you. Well, then certainly that song from the first Portal game, I would say, justifies it. I think my second song would be from, the BioShock Infinite we were talking about earlier. One of the first songs you listen to when you first get into the world of Columbia is a great little transitional piece of music. I think it's called Welcome to Columbia. That's the second one. And the third one, I would say the original theme to Zelda, just to throw some variety in there.
Well, I guess someone's got to say it, right?
I'll take the classics. I'll take it.
Someone's got to say it. I guess I will answer my own question. Tom, you took a lot of my answers.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Super Metroid.
The Super Metroid is a very ambient soundtrack, and it's a very impressive what they do with limited technology. But I guess if I had to just say three songs, did any of you play DuckTales on the NES?
DuckTales, yes, I put
that. There's the moon music from DuckTales is probably like the best example of chiptune music that I feel I could throw at someone, and it's... Thank you. Yeah, I feel everybody has maybe kind of heard this song in the background. Well, not Pete, because he lived in nowhere. But I would do the moon music from DuckTales. I'd do the suicide mission from Mass Effect 2,
yeah,
which is like this really just epic action music. It's very, very Hollywood, but it just really fits the scene at the end of Mass Effect 2. When you are obviously going on a suicide mission, and it's bombastic and it's emotional, and it's you're trying to get through this difficult mission, and it's great. It's a really great piece of music. And then Noah, I'm gonna jump in your camp and suggest One Winged Angel from Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, it's a good one.
It's a great one. Perhaps Nobuo Uematsu's best work. All right, never mind, Noah.
I like that there's like a polka breakdown in the middle of it while you're fighting Sephiroth.
Yeah, there really is. Are there any composers that we've touched on or any games in specific that you guys want to talk about? I kind of just want to open the floor at this point. I've got a couple of more questions that'll take us out, but I kind of want to poll my experts and see if there's something you guys want to touch on.
Well, one guy we haven't talked about at all yet is... Junichi Masuda, who is the composer for the Pokemon games, or the original Pokemon games. I think those have a pretty good soundtrack, but interestingly, he was the composer for Pokemon Red and Blue, and then ended up taking over direction of the games at Gen 3.
That's really interesting.
I've never played any of the Pokemon games. I was a little old for them. No, Pokemon is...
you are not a little...
No, I'm it's not. Pokemon is a massive, successful juggernaut.
Gotta catch them all.
You gotta catch them all.
Well, the games are great, and they've got a good soundtrack, and also an interesting one because the first games are on the Game Boy, and they've got that real limited sound technology and kind of make the most of it. But the successive games largely keep a lot of the same musical themes, but just keep building on them and adding harmonies and new instrument sounds as the technology advances, to the point where, like, now they could have and do sometimes have, like, full-scale orchestral music in the background, but most of the music is still just like weird chiptune remixes of songs they've already had.
I feel we would be remiss if we did not mention Koichi Sugiyama, who scored the Dragon Quest series of games. He's actually one of the few he was a big mainstream composer in Japan when they invited him to create the music for Dragon Quest, which was a very kind of ballsy move because they're essentially taking one of the best composers of their country and then asking him to create chiptune music. But he did it, and the music is great. And then, of course, they went on and reorchestrated all of that music, so... And for those in the listening audience who don't know, Dragon Quest is probably one of the biggest competitions to Final Fantasy, so...
I think it's interesting that, like, almost all these composers we're talking about are Japanese.
Yeah, I mean, like, I know here in the West, at least as far as consoles go, I know they brought in Harry Gregson-Williams, who was a composer with Hans Zimmer, to do the Metal Gear Solid soundtrack. And I know, like, on the PC side of things, like, Chris Hulsbeck... is a pretty famous composer. He worked on the Turrican games for PC and then got taken in by LucasArts and orchestrated a lot of the LucasArts games. Of course, a lot of the LucasArts games use Star Wars soundtracks, but he would create rearrangements of them. So for like Rogue Squadron, Rogue Squadron 2, that's all him.
Yeah, like I was looking up composers for game soundtracks that I like, and I found one that wasn't Japanese, which is Grant Kirkhope. Grant Kirkhope did the music for GoldenEye and Perfect Dark and Banjo-Kazooie and Viva Pinata, all of which I think have pretty good soundtracks.
I wonder if there's, and this may be like why I'm kind of on the other side of this than a lot of you guys are, if there's just sort of a divergence, since so many consoles are like products of Japan, in like the cultural emphasis getting placed on making awesome music for those games versus... you know, Western games, where it's more like, let's make an awesome game and then make some adequate music to go with it.
I mean, I think, just to speak to your point, Noah, about the Japanese composers, I mean, Nintendo and Sega kind of revitalized the video game market after the crash, so it kind of makes sense that the Japanese, when they got the foothold that they did throughout the 80s and 90s, we would see a lot of Japanese composers, and a lot of that music would influence... anyone who played those consoles.
They kept the music. They just changed, you know, all the Japanese to English, but the music all stayed.
Yeah. Although, funny thing, like, aside from like mainstream Nintendo games, I know it was not looked upon to be known as the person who created music for certain games in Japan. I'm specifically thinking about Mega Man, where they don't list the people who made the game. Like all the names when they come up at the credits are all pseudonyms. So instead of Keiji Inafune, they would call him K-pop. So you wouldn't really know who actually made the game because it wasn't looked upon as a really good
feel. Well, you leave
feel.
It off your resume.
You leave it off your resume. I mean, this is 80s in Japan, so, yeah. You know, who knew? but that's an interesting point, Pete. Do you guys have anything to say about that? Like, why it's a lot of Japanese composers or, you know, like, where are the American composers?
Well, I mean, I think it's... I think they're out there, and I think a lot of them, we touched on this earlier too, I think a lot of them are the big cinematic movie composers, you know, Hans Zimmer. I know Clint Mansell even did some stuff for Mass Effect. But I think a lot of sort of the other Western games, you might have a good point. Maybe the music isn't thought of as an intimate sort of pairing with the game, and maybe that's where they suffer sometimes.
Yeah, like maybe that's an extra thing, and if you've got money for it, that's great, but...
I do know that Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails fame created the soundtrack for Quake.
Great.
For all you Nine Inch Nails fans out there, so good job, Trent Reznor.
I feel like it's a different culture. I mean, musicians, I think, in Japan might actually strive to be a video game composer these days. I don't know that that's the case in America. Just speaking in generalities.
I don't know.
Yeah, I guess also maybe it's also like a product of a lot of these composers were the composer for their video game studio. So they did all the compositions for every game that got made there. And I guess thinking about it, like there are Western games that have good soundtracks, but they probably just hired someone to write a song or the soundtrack, but wouldn't have them back necessarily for the sequel.
Right. It's not always someone who just makes all of the music for that company. So they don't get that cohesive, like... cross game feel for like these are our kind of soundtracks.
I think there is something to be said for some more independent gaming companies that do try to integrate music much much more cohesively with the whole thing. I mean, like we were talking briefly to Fez, that soundtrack was created concurrently with the game. Like he was going back and forth with them, they were playing it, they were checking it out, and so Phil Fish sort of collaborated with them on that. Not a huge game release, but certainly a major game in the last couple of years.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, indie games are a really interesting field for music composition too, because a lot of indie games will just purchase music that's available for licensing. So that's actually an avenue that aspiring American composers are increasingly like making money from, being licensed for an indie game that gets popular. Like, I know the soundtrack for Braid is composed by several different people, and all those songs already existed and were just purchased by Jonathan Blow and, like, assembled into a soundtrack, which I couldn't believe when I heard that, because that game has amazing music and it all sounds so cohesive, but it's just a bunch of different songs by different people.
Hmm. I actually did that. That's the first time I'm hearing that. That's really interesting.
The hour mark, so we've got to slowly start wrapping this up. Pete, have we done it? Are you gonna go out and buy the soundtrack to Castlevania?
I'm not.
Okay.
I'm
nobody not. Buys soundtracks. Download the damn thing. No.
No, I mean I'm still a bit in the same camp. Like, I'm not gonna go out and listen to music from a game that I haven't played. Mm-hmm. Frankly, I'm not gonna like listen to music from games that I have played just to listen to it. Mm-hmm. Like, I love it when, like, a new Diablo game comes out and I turn it on and the login screen for that first time is like, bloom, 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 bloom. And I'm like, just like crying, remembering everything that happened in the last game. It's like he stuck the thing in his forehead, and then he turned it. And you
making
know,
potions.
It's yeah, like when companies do a great job creating those really very specific things that tie their audience to those experiences of playing the games. Like, they're not just creating an emotional experience for the audience; they're also bringing people back for their next product.
True.
You know, it's the equivalent of like ba-da-da-da-da. You know, it identifies that company and that experience, and it's all this package that you recognize and you want more of it. So yeah, I guess that's what I'm saying.
I have to admit, I feel like the soundtrack to Diablo 3 is not as strong as Diablo 2.
Nope, not at all.
Agreed.
No.
we all jumped on that.
There's not much in Diablo 3 that like I picked up from the other games, but it's like just a few of those like really distinctive, like basically like that one phrase of music and like the sound effect when like something drops money.
Yeah.
Or like picking up a potion, you know, that like bloop, you know, and that's it. And that was enough to like tie that game to the other one. Plus the like pages and pages of lore and all that, but
yeah.
But yeah, audio wise, like I think it's quality versus quantity, I guess.
Something, I mean, we're just focusing specifically on Diablo 3, and I feel this happens to a lot of... I feel this actually does happen to a lot of games nowadays. Sometimes games are just so big budget or cinematic that the soundtracks come off very bland, very generic. There's nothing... There's nothing...
Like a lot of movies today.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, now we need an epic song.
It has to be safe because they spent so much money on it, so they do the, you know, formulaic music.
Right. And it's
color by numbers.
And it's not going to be...
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing in Diablo 3 that is as haunting as when you went into the cathedral for the first time in Diablo.
No
and
risks.
There's, like, that choir kind of singing as the music comes up. And it's not even... I mean, it's Redbook audio, but it's not real instruments. I think it's all synthesized stuff for the most part, but I think game soundtracks along with games kind of suffer from their inflation of budget,
right? And wanting to reach like the widest possible market, so be doing just sort of a generically appealing thing versus, you know, getting really specific and doing what you care about and hopefully it's awesome, but maybe it
taking
won't
risks.
Yeah.
All right, so let me throw out a final question to my experts here. Like why are we talking about this? Why are we talking about game music? Why and don't say because I called you in to do a podcast. like why do we listen to this music? Or if you don't, what does music need to do to make the gaming experience better? And Noah, I'm gonna start with you because you're the one person I haven't started with yet.
All right. Well, as to your very last bit at the end there. What gaming music does for me, I think, is really enhance my enjoyment of video games frequently. I think a good soundtrack really adds to the experience of playing a game as much as the graphics, and in some cases, the gameplay, if it's a really good soundtrack. I really like video game music because I've played a lot of video games, and so if I've heard good music while I'm playing them, I want to listen to that music. But I think it's increasingly, as games become more mainstream, I think video game music is becoming more mainstream and becoming... as we've said earlier, like a bigger project for the studios that are making the games. I mean, one thing we didn't even touch on that you could probably do a whole nerd podcast and assemble people who are really into this is like chiptune the genre of music outside of video games that's just music inspired by video game music, which is like a thriving genre in its own right. So I think increasingly people are just into video game music and for good reason because a lot of it's really good.
Zach, I want to jump to you.
Sure. For me, the reason we're doing this, and I may be the only one in this game, I'm not 100% positive, but I think video game music exists as worthy of sort of independent study, rather, you know, playing a video game or not. And I think for me, a lot of it is recalling a moment, you know, and being sort of nostalgic with the idea of it, and maybe some music that you are nostalgic about isn't necessarily that good. But I think a lot of this stuff is, you know, regardless of where the money comes from, regardless of how the production does it, is worthwhile, interesting music and accomplishes everything as music that any other music you listen to does, you know, whether it's because it sounds good, it's a nice beat, or it helps you recall a certain emotion, or whatever music does for any person. And I think video game music belongs in as high a rank as that stuff, and can be independent from what it sort of originally came into creation for.
Tom?
Yeah, I mean, we spend so much of our lives playing these games. I think it just occurred to me, I think I've spent more time listening to the Diablo 2 soundtrack than any other piece of music. Just collectively, just because of playing the game so much, or perhaps Smash Brothers. That could be a close second. Anyway, so I'm saying, like, this music, I mean, you can't help but become attached to it by listening to it so much. But Zach's totally right. In its own respect, this is legitimate music with qualified, extraordinarily talented composers from the beginning, working with very limited resources and yet still coming up with often amazing results. And now, to the point where the composer clearly must be involved with when a character moves into a different area of the map, you know? I mean, they need to be consulted and told what's to be expected in this area of the map, or maybe they're given general guidelines. I'm not sure how it works, but that relationship between the composer and the game player today in video games is amazing, and it's magical in a way that movies can't even provide, because I'm in control. I'm not watching a movie. I'm actually controlling what's going on. I know if I go into this area, this is going to happen. If I put this on, you know, musical change, etc. But also, it can be surprising and can affect your mood in ways that are completely unexpected, and that's why I think we're talking about video game music.
I feel we should at least touch on, I've had podcasts where we talked about video games live and the Zelda concerts here in America. They've also had orchestral game concerts in Japan. But there's actually a lot of stuff online on YouTube that people are doing that's really fascinating. Have any of you ever been to the website Overclock Remix?
Oh, sure.
For those who don't know, Overclock Remix is a giant database of game music, and essentially, like, what people are doing is freelance composers or whatnot are just taking music that they like from video games and rearranging it in a certain way, or giving it an orchestration, or creating music inspired by games. It's a really, really fascinating website. It's never been taken down, so I'm assuming none of the composers or none of the game companies have a problem with it. It's essentially free press for the old games, so I guess they're not really... Well, they're probably breaking copyright laws, but again, nobody's really taking any action. It's just a really amazing fan community, and it's if there's a game that you really like, I would suggest going to Overclock Remix and seeing if you can find it and see what music people have taken from that game and how they've orchestrated it or rearranged it. Yeah, Zach, Noah, you both said you've had experience with that website?
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. It's, I mean, they've just got a whole community of people that are fixated on it and want to remix it and play with it. And I don't know, I think that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like a great place to find really interesting things that people are doing with music and arrangements and remixes and things, music that already exists that you already like. So it's a pretty cool resource.
I want to give a shout out to three YouTubers. And I've used some of their music selections before. First off is Smooth McGroove. For video games, everything from Minecraft to Mario to anything in between, and it's just him, and it's him recording his own voice, doing the different parts and harmonizing with himself. So It's really, really fascinating. He looks like Jesus, so, and he has a cat. So you,
yeah, or like he's on Duck Dynasty.
There's another guy out there named Family Jewels 7X who does a lot of rock arrangements of video game music, and he recently put out a 17-minute long tribute to the history of video games. Starts with Pac-Man, and he works all the way through to Skyrim. I challenge you to listen to that whole song and see if you can pick out how many franchises he touches on. And he just goes from song to song seamlessly. It's really impressive. And then Lindsay Stirling. Are any of you familiar with Lindsay Stirling?
Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah, she has a tendency to dress up / cosplay as Link. But she also does beautiful violin arrangements of video game music. She did one for Skyrim, that's great, Assassin's Creed, Halo. Usually she joins up with other musicians and creates these really epic music videos. So I would suggest searching for any of them on YouTube and checking out their work. Do you guys have anyone that you want to throw out that I should know about?
Sure. In the same vein, I definitely recommend Teamwork. If you're into hip-hop, they do remixes where they remix video game soundtracks into beats and then put a cappella rap over them. Some of it's really great. My personal favorite is the Ocarina of Rhyme album. Definitely some choice stuff. Also, as I briefly alluded to, I listen to a lot of chiptune music that's not actually from any video games, but sounds like it could be or should be. There's a whole world of chiptune out there that's really cool if you're into it. Two of my favorite artists are Shinon, who pretty much exclusively makes music off of a Game Boy, and it sounds like really good Game Boy-made music, and Anna Monoguchi, who's kind of the biggest, most popular chiptune band around these days, and they're a full band with guitars and drums and stuff, but also running a lot of synthesizers from video games.
That's awesome. I would recommend Quentin Sung. This is someone who did a full 8-bit cover of Kid A, which I love 8-bit covers of music and see how they interpret it. Kid A, the old Radiohead album, of course.
Oh.
Super interesting. And then an outfit called AMU is some great chip music as well. Yeah, that's what I'd push on people.
Cool. Are they both on YouTube or pretty easy to find?
Yes. Yeah, they're very easy to find.
Okay. Well, we've been talking for a while here, and with the amount of music that I have spliced in, I'm sure this podcast might be pretty long at this point. So it is time to bring the video game music discussion to a close. I feel we could probably go another hour or two just speaking about specific composers, but we can make those separate podcasts. So, cool, guys. Well, at this time, does anybody have anything they want to pimp out? Something they're working on? Another podcast? Anything that you wanna talk about at this time? Let our viewers or listeners know about.
I just shot season 2 of a web series called #. It's fun, especially I guess if you're into lesbians who mess up their relationships through social media. It's on Telefilms. You don't have to pay to watch it, but it's fairly funny, and I'm in it. And I've got a couple of short films out there at festivals, so if you're a short film nerd, go to film festivals and see Portraiture or A Beautiful View of Nothing.
Nice. What festivals are those going to, can you say? Or?
Portraiture is currently somewhere in China screening. It's on its third country now.
For our Chinese listeners.
Beautiful View of Nothing will be screening out in Rockford at whatever their film festival in the beginning of August is called.
Cool. Tom?
Well, nothing going on right now. I audition a lot. You can check out my Twitter. How about that? thombrown3.com is the website.
Very nice.
Is that a number three or like...
The number three, exactly.
Very, very, very good, Tom. Zach?
Nothing online right now, but if you happen to be in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, I do a regular show on Fridays and Saturdays at a theater called 4-Day Weekend. And it's fantastic. It's a live improv show, and that's at 7:30 and 10 o'clock on Fridays and Saturdays. And then I also perform over at the Dallas Comedy House just whenever I sort of feel like it. Just whenever I feel like it.
Nice. Noah?
Well, I just got done shooting a pilot with you, Chris.
Sure did.
Yeah, it's called The Show Might Go On. It's being produced by Pubhouse Productions, and it's in post now, I hope, so... Maybe someday it'll be out.
As Noah's kind of already alluded to, if you're in the Chicago area, you can find me at the Public House Theater. I hang around there quite often. You can also listen to my voice on my fellow podcasts, Blastro Podcast and Alcohollywood. They're both really, really great shows, so I'd encourage you to listen to them. If you have any questions, comments, protests, or whatnot about the show or topic suggestions, you can please email them to nerdoutcastpodcast@gmail.com. I've been your host, Chris Bashan, and talking with me about video game music have been...
Zach Munn.
Tom Brown.
Noah Applebaum.
And Pete Navis.
Thank you, and have a good night.